There is but one more Formula One race to go, and it is going to be brilliant.
Is it?
What a setup.
Is that your official prediction?
It's not even a prediction. It's a given.
It just is.
There is no way. I mean, the race may not live up to expectations, but we cannot ask for more as Formula One fans than what the entire scenario we are looking at for the final weekend in Brazil, 2012. This is what every Formula One fan with a soul wants to happen. You've got the ultimate showdown between the ultimate drivers on the final race of the year at a brilliant circuit, the kind of circuit that should decide all championships.
I think you could ask for a tiny bit more. It could either be a little bit closer, or there could maybe be more people in with a chance. But it's about as close to perfection as you could get.
Let's just look at the basic facts. You have the fastest guy in the fastest car leading, but you have the best guy in not the fastest car snapping at his heels. And the weather is going to mix things up this weekend, which is exactly what you'd want when you've got an underdog driver who has better car control and has all the experience of a championship showdown such as this at this very circuit, lest you not forget. And this is exactly what we want. We've got the potential that you've got the rain, you've got the...
Well, we want only so much rain, because otherwise you get like massive delays or shortened races.
Well, there is this year, of course, the limit, the cap, the finite point when the race will be declared as over. We cannot have endless rain on Sunday. We can have a very, very, very long qualifying session. It feels like it's never going to end because there is no limit on how long qualifying could last. But on Sunday, there will come a point when the race has to be called. If that happens and the required number of laps have not been run, then you have the potential of half points,
which is another variable
to throw into the mix, because the last thing Fernando Alonso needs is half points to be awarded. What he needs is a full race to be run to its completion, or at least to, is it 75% or whatever that limit is when the full points kick in. And what he needs is variable conditions where it's a bit damp, then maybe a bit dry, and he has to make the right tyre calls to try and jump Sebastian Vettel, who has the faster car in the dry. And this is what we want. We want some rain, but not too much rain. We don't want a safety car start, and we don't want a race to be delayed or cancelled entirely.
You don't want much then. You've got very specific things you want
to happen. I know exactly what I want to happen this Sunday. Do you think that there's any chance that that might happen?
Well, I think one of the most telling things, I think, is at the moment we've got a poll on the site about who do you think deserves the championship, because we did a point counterpoint post in which I took the side of Alonso, and a new author, Munaf, who's Tyre Smoke on Twitter, and that's smoke with a zero instead of an O, he took the side of Vettel, and we argued who deserves it. And the poll there is firmly in Alonso's favour. But I think we're probably going to do another poll that is who is going to win, and I think that might be a different result.
So when it comes to who do side podcasts readers and listeners prefer, who would they prefer to see take the championship? Alonso is leading, but when it comes to, you think it's going to switch around when we ask them who is most likely to take it?
Well, Vettel has the lead, obviously. I think it's about 13 points he's got. So that is a significant margin, and he's going to have to pretty much retire to not take the championship. But also it's really interesting because in the comments, everyone was like, well, isn't there an option for both? Because I think they both deserve it. Vettel has been the fastest.
Well, somebody
man in the
has to win.
Car.
No, there isn't an option for both, because somebody has to win the world championship. You can't have two. You can't have joint winners.
No.
Why not give prizes to everybody?
Like,
all the drivers, didn't they do
part?
Well? Nobody goes home with nothing.
Someone has
One.
To win, but they can both deserve it for different reasons.
Yeah, but somebody has to win. Firstly, I'm guessing that you think Fernando Alonso deserves it in your mind.
Well, that's who I argued for.
And therefore, the question really is, who do you think will take the championship on Sunday?
Vettel.
Because he's that far ahead and because he's got so much advantage?
Because really, the only thing that can go wrong for Vettel is the alternator. That is the one thing that everyone who doesn't want him to win is pinning their hopes on.
But you don't think he has any weaknesses as a driver at all? Because unless Sebastian Vettel gets pole and manages to break the DRS toe before lap 3 when it becomes enabled, he is vulnerable. In traffic, he's vulnerable. When he's chasing other drivers, he is vulnerable. His mind management isn't as solid as Alonso. All you need is one driver, just one person to get pole and all go into turn one in front of him. And then the guy has weaknesses.
He does, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that he might get pole position and streak off into the lead. We've seen it before a lot.
Okay, but Brazil in the past has been known for playing host to a number of safety cars, and that could easily curtail Sebastian's advantage. I mean, there's so much at stake, but equally there are so many variables still going into the mix. I don't think Sebastian Vettel is anywhere near home and dry, and I think he knows it.
Well, I think there are a lot of variables, and it's going to be really good. I am convinced that Vettel is, in my Eeyore fashion, I'm convinced that Vettel is just going to get pole position and win it. But even if he does, I mean, it's been the most amazing season. It's not even a disappointment.
I do not want this Formula One season to end. I am loving it. It could just go on and on and on. I don't care. I could watch this. I could watch these cars with this kind of performance variables, you know, ebbing and flowing and all the things thrown into the mix. I could watch this forever.
I don't think I've ever heard you say that before.
Oh, I think before we started Side Podcast, Michael Schumacher was literally,
yep.
I'm loving this season. Maybe more than the 2009 season, which was epic, and the 2008 season, which I loved to pieces. I really, really, really like the last, 9 months of Formula One racing? I've just loved every single bit of it.
What we should also mention while we're talking about championships is that Red Bull managed to wrap up the constructors' title at the last race in America. And that's 3 in a row for them. That's quite a lot.
That is, it's almost unprecedented.
And they won it by a mile.
Well, the development rate at Milton Keynes has been beyond incredible this season. They didn't start the year, and unusually, they did not start this season with the fastest car. It's been a while since that was the case. McLaren absolutely, unquestionably had the fastest chassis when we came to start the season in Australia. But Red Bull have seized the advantage through continual upgrades, cutting edge and rule bending improvements and enhancements. And they deserve, without question in my mind, to take the Constructors' Championship. They are the best on the grid, and Adrian Newey still has it. He has not lost any of his innovation despite years and years and years of rule and regulation changes to try and curtail him. You can just see
Keep him down.
You cannot keep him down, and you cannot keep Red Bull at bay. And it's well deserved, that Constructors' Championship.
They also have the advantage of two drivers who are both very good. Mm. But they also, I mean, one of the things they have, which isn't necessarily a good thing, but it works in their favour, is that they have team orders, but somehow they manage to keep up the morale of Mark Webber most of the time.
I think this year Red Bull team orders have been less necessary.
Mm.
Webber's had more than his fair share of unreliability. And that is the one thing, that's the one weakness at Red Bull. No question about it. They're pushing they're pushing every single envelope in so many directions that eventually something has to give. And it's normally the mechanical parts made by third parties, actually.
Yeah.
They seem to give up first. But in that case, unfortunately, Webber has bore the brunt of those failures. And that has put him in a position where, or at least put the team in a position where they didn't need to enact any team orders. So therefore his morale is, you know, he knows that it's an unfortunate stream of coincidences that have put him behind Vettel.
Yeah, but it always seems like Red Bull's team orders are really annoying team orders. And then you get Ferrari's team orders, which are like stomping on Massa and throwing him out.
Yes, they pretty much, yeah. Are we talking about Austin? Is that where you're going with this?
I wouldn't mention that.
Go on then, tell me what you think about Austin. Where were you when Ferrari decided to fiddle with Massa's gearbox?
I can understand it, why they would want to do it. I don't think it's very sporting. It's very harsh on Massa, although I think he took it very well and proved that they shouldn't mess with him because he had a really good race after that.
Mm.
But it doesn't surprise me from Ferrari, and you know, it's not against the rules. So that's kind of the way it goes, I guess.
I think that Austin was Felipe Massa's second finest hour.
You're making a list.
Yeah, well, I might be. But his most gracious period was when he thought he won the World Championship, and then 5 seconds later, Lewis Hamilton came and took it straight off of him. which was, you know, that he showed some incredible sporting, what's the word for it? Sporting
sportsmanship.
Sportsmanship. His incredible sporting sportsmanship.
Yep.
In Brazil. That's a great sentence. however, in Austin, I think he almost went one better because although the team did their best to kick him in the head and to knock him down and to, you know, to really mess him up, I think he put it all behind him and he raced a great race. And he showed that he has the mental capacity to put the things that Ferrari do to him to one side and still put in, you know, a fine performance on a Sunday afternoon, which he, you know, earlier in this season, without any of that pressure from Ferrari, he was struggling to do that in a car that didn't suit him. And now he's got a car that suits him. Pile on that pressure all you like, and you still can't keep him down.
I hope they can keep up the fact that the car suits him, because with both of them doing better, there may be someone in with a chance of hustling Red Bull next year.
We need two top-notch Ferrari drivers in a fast car. Because do we want to see Red Bull take a fourth Constructors' Championship? Do we want to see Vettel win this year and take another one next year? No. No, no, no. Now it's somebody else's turn. And what you need to do that, you need strong drivers in strong teams with the ultimate lineup. McLaren, they don't have that for next year with Perez.
No.
Perez is really not covered himself in glory since being announced as a McLaren driver. That is a seriously weak lineup that the team from Woking have there. So you're relying on Ferrari to take it to Red Bull next year. There isn't many. Maybe Lotus are the only people willing to step up and do that.
Mercedes probably have the lineup now, but not the car.
No, not the wind tunnel, not the aerodynamics. They don't have a Newey. There's nobody, as far as I can tell, at Mercedes who understands aerodynamics at all. It seems to be the case. They for the love of, did I hear that they went back to their summer exhaust layout? The car they were running mid-season, they went back to in Austin, and they may well be running it this weekend. Whatever they try to throw at the new chassis, it doesn't respond, and they can't get the most out of it. And Lewis Hamilton's in for a tough season next year.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating to see how he deals with that. Here's a conspiracy theory for you. In the comments, F has said, I maintain that there is a Kurz fail switch remote for Webber's car. It seems to be every race that he's anywhere near the front. Ferrari lacks the technology to be subtle about it. So they have to dig in and mess about with Massa's gearbox, whereas Red Bull, they've just got a switch around the back. I like the idea. He does seem to have a lot of Kurz failures.
Yeah, I can't debunk that conspiracy theory. The thing with Kurz is I can't understand why Red Bull can't get that together with all of their expertise in other areas. How is it that they more than anybody else have so many Kurz issues? Is it that they're outsourcing the whole design, and or is it the fact that the person making the Kurz box isn't talking to Adrian Newey and he keeps making the package too small and overheating it? It never, since Kurz has been introduced, have Red Bull been a team to capitalize on that feature of Formula One.
They've
never got
like
the most
it.
Of it. Webber, no, more often than not, it is Webber who has trouble with it. So maybe it's his driving style. Maybe it's just the way he sets up the car. I don't know. But yeah, that's a second. There you go. On top of the alternator, Kurz is another Red Bull weakness. It's another thing.
We're finding them now.
When you think about it, they're not that. You know, there are there's a potential that all may not go well on Sunday for them. He says, with everything crossed.
All may not go well for Webber, which doesn't help us at all.
The wrong car broke down in Austin. No, I don't mean that. What I really, really want is for the setup we have this Sunday. I couldn't ask for more. And I don't really mind, actually, in the end, who takes it. I'm just glad that it's gone down to the wire.
We mentioned Renault for a moment there, and that leads me nicely on to Caterham. Now, you'll have to bear with me. I know you can't see the immediate link there. Today, as we are recording this, there was news all over the place. Drivers being announced left, right and centre. Charles Pick at Caterham. Who would have thought?
Technically, I do believe this was covered on the latest Aside with Joe show. So, Joe
would have thought.
For one. Oh. I think we did talk about
Joe
that.
Joe knows everything.
It doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense to me, except for the link with Renault. That is the, I mean, let's just take Charles Pick's season at Marussia. Has he stood out as a potential shining light in Formula One to you?
No. Well, for a start, I keep on forgetting what he looks like because we never ever see him on TV. We had to watch the Sky coverage for the race in Austin, and they interviewed him during one of the practice sessions, which is weird because BBC don't do interviews during practice, so it was a surprise to see a face at all. And it was Pick, and I thought, wow, he actually exists. I don't remember seeing him or hearing about him all season.
Completely and totally anonymous. Next question. Has Charles Pick done any more this season than, let's say, Jerome D'Ambrosio in a previous year or Lucas Degrassi in the year before that?
Well, I can tell you that Pick compared to Glock, which is never fair because Glock has done quite a lot of races. Mm-hmm. Pick has done one season. But he has out-qualified Glock 7 times.
Which is okay.
And he's out-raced him 6 times. So he's about half as good as Glock.
Which is not
bad. If you just go by the numbers.
That's not bad for your debut season on circuits that you don't know too well. And comparatively, I think Glock is possibly getting slightly worse. And the longer he stays at Marussia, the worse it is for his career. But to me, I don't see what makes Pick stand out any more than previous number two Marussia drivers.
Well, see, you are clearly not looking in the right places because Cyril Abiteboul, which is how I like to say his name, whether it is pronounced like
that
or not.
That is his name, yes.
He is the new team principal at Caterham. He said, "We're all looking forward to working with a young driver." I don't know if there's an emphasis on the young there. Glock, getting a bit old. We want a young driver. "Who has clearly shown in his first season in F1 that he has the pace, racecraft and demeanour to help us achieve our goals." Clearly. I must have missed that bit.
Okay, yes, brackets.
Or if you listen to Jean-François Colbet, who is from Renault, he said, "We're always motivated to see promising drivers in our partner teams, and Charles is no exception. Additionally, France remains the largest Renault market, and having another young, dynamic French driver join the Renault stable will give us further branding, marketing, and PR opportunities." There's your answer.
That's the reason that he is at Caterham. So, regardless of how well Pick has or hasn't done in the Marussia this year, he is now signed at Caterham. Is it a long-term agreement? Is it a one-year agreement?
It's multi-year, which doesn't mean anything, but more than one.
Okay, so for the next few seasons, he will be a Caterham driver because Tony Fernandez has this massive plan to build Renault-engined or Renault-branded cars in combination with Caterham. And therefore, Renault, presumably, I'm assuming, sort of hinted to Tony that it would be really good if he had a French driver in their team, with a grand plan, would we assume, to turn Caterham into the factory works Renault team and bring Renault back into Formula One? Long, very long term in the distance. Is that sort of where you're thinking? Or is that just
me? It's
not
where I'm thinking.
Okay, it might be what I'm just thinking. That long term, Renault obviously made a swift exit from Formula One, thanks to Flavio Briatore and his meddling ways. They got out as fast as they possibly could, and even that was drawn out and long and convoluted because nobody would take the team off their hands, understandably. But I didn't get the impression they wanted to particularly leave Formula One. It wasn't like they were desperate to get out and they were looking for an excuse, and Flavio handed them the perfect reason.
It was all just a bit embarrassing.
They didn't really want to be associated with him anymore. And they're still happy to make engines, and they're obviously making engines for probably half the grid now. Tony, I'm sure, has seen an opportunity, just like he saw an opportunity with the Lotus brand before Danny Behar got in the way and ruined it all. And therefore, I think that's what Tony's doing. He's found another partner who has got a long-term vision and a long-term interest in Formula One, and he wants to bring that brand back.
So, all right, let me just get my head around this. Okay, so Caterham, that used to be Lotus.
Caterham? They used to be Team Lotus.
Team yes, Lotus.
In their first year.
And you say they're going to become Renault, whereas Renault have now become Lotus.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not having that. Because Renault that are now Lotus, that's the proper Renault. I'm not having some pretending to be Renault team. Well, we've already had enough of that with this Lotus everywhere. I'm not having Renaults all up and down the grid.
But Renault that might become... But Renault, that Lotus... What are they called? Caterham. But Caterham that were Lotus that might become Renault, they've moved their factory right next to Renault that now Lotus. So they're like 11 miles apart from where they used to be based.
I'm totally
Which I'm sure is
now.
Not a massive coincidence either.
Okay. I got lost.
It's not that complicated. It is that complicated.
Lotus
no,
and
right.
Caterham and Renault and Lotus. And they could be trying to be Renault, but it would seem odd to me that Renault would want to come back in. I think it wouldn't be like you leave F1 and then take 1 year out and then come back the next year. It's a bit sort of too soon.
One word. Honda. There are rumours abound that Honda might be interested in coming back to Formula 1. This is the team that ditched Formula 1, and the team they left in the sport went on to win the World Championship. Now, even Honda are rumoured to be having second thoughts and might be interested in coming back. When there's money around, when the economy is doing well, car manufacturers like to be seen to be associated with motorsport like Formula 1. And with the economy bouncing, well, at least on the way up.
Doing well.
It's on the way up and heading, you know, within 5 years you'd assume it would begin to bounce back. That's the sort of time frame we're talking here. We're definitely talking long term. This isn't going to happen for next year or the year after. Those are the sort of timescales we're talking, and that's when large manufacturers would be looking at going back into Formula One. And I'm sure that Tony, that hasn't that fact hasn't escaped Tony, and he's got a long-term vision. The downside to all of this, when all is said and done, is that Pick is in and Heikki Kovalainen is probably out. There is one spare seat at Caterham still to be confirmed, and after Sunday, I assume that is when it will be announced, depending on where Caterham finish.
Do we know who there's going to be if it wasn't Heikki? Because it's not going to be Petrov, because he hasn't got any money.
That's a good question. Petrov might end up at Marussia, because there is the
because he's Russian.
Well, yeah, but there's also the Russian Grand Prix on the horizon. Again, another long-term bet would be Petrov in Russia.
Guido Vandergaard.
It's going to be. Here's the thing: if Caterham don't manage to take their what place is it? 12th place back from Marussia. They don't
10th place.
10th place back. Sorry,
with a 12th place finish.
That's right. That's the thing that was in my head. If Caterham don't manage to switch those places back in this final race on Sunday, they are going to be short of an awful lot of cash, and therefore they need to make up that shortfall some other way, and pay drivers are a good way to do that. I presume Pick is bringing some money, and therefore they need another driver who can at least pay some of their way, if not all of their way. Heikki has already said he's not interested in doing that.
He's told his team not to be looking for money. He doesn't want to go down that road. And he hasn't said he's not in F1 next year, but he said it's looking unlikely.
I can't see a place for Heikki, unfortunately. Here's the thing about Caterham. They have seriously unimpressed me this year in terms of where I expected them to be and where they actually are. They haven't moved far enough up the grid. They haven't shown enough pace. They're still fighting with the with Marussia, which they shouldn't, should be well clear of them. I mean, Marussia don't have Kurs. I mean, it's amazing that Marussia have managed to beat them with the comparative chassis that they're running. And the thing is, Heikki Kovalainen hasn't, by whatever means, dragged them out of that hole. He hasn't outdriven the car. He hasn't outdeveloped the car. He hasn't done anything to really bring the team forward. So what is the point of keeping Heikki Kovalainen at Caterham? I love the guy. I think he's fantastic. Formula One will not be the same without him. Interestingly, he came into Formula One the same year that we started covering it. So our paths have sort of been,
Intertwined.
Oh, yes. Bless. Something like that.
Getting all emotional now.
And now he's going to be gone, and that's a shame. But at the same time, it's hard to argue to keep him. He doesn't bring any money. I'm not quite sure what he does bring. The best thing that Heikki had going for him was that he was best mates with Tony Fernandez. And last month, Tony took a step back and said, well, I'm not really interested in running the team anymore. We'll give it to Cyril. And I don't know if Cyril and Heikki are BFFs, but that was sort of, that was the thing that was keeping him at Caterham. And now that's gone.
The other driver announcement actually came yesterday via Sergio Perez.
Whoops.
But he was
somebody
popular.
Put their foot in it.
Oh,
what
dear.
A lemon.
Poor Manisha and poor Kamui.
Yeah.
Way to be outed by your ex-teammate.
Unfair. That was mean and unnecessary. And Perez has gone considerably down in my opinion.
I don't think it was mean. I think it was a bit stupid.
You don't think it was deliberate? I think it was deliberate.
I think
it read like it was absolutely intentional.
I don't think you can tell these things unless you hear how they said it. It's easy to read into what the quotes are and stuff. I suspect he just, because it's probably been a fact for about 6 months. So he probably at this point just went out and blurted it out.
That's true, but he doesn't care. He's not with the team next year.
No. If what are they going to do? Fire him?
Yeah, exactly. If Perez was driving for Sauber this time next year, then I bet, I propose that Sergio Perez would not have said what he said.
No.
Given the same opportunity. If he had to do the whole thing again, I don't think he would have. And that is not a coincidence.
So a hurried announcement came today with Esteban Gutierrez in at Sauber and Kamui Kobayashi out. So it's Esteban and Nico Hülkenberg for 2013 with Robin Frins as their reserve driver.
That, to me, is a solid lineup.
Well, I was looking at it and I thought, oh, this is a really interesting team.
Mm.
But I said that about Hülkenberg and Paul de Resta, and look how that turned out.
Hülkenberg is going to have a clear advantage over Esteban for the foreseeable future. He knows the circuits. He's been in Formula One a long time. He's clearly a fast driver. I think Sauber have made a good decision in hiring him. And Esteban's got a lot to learn. We have been following. I keep wanting to call him Gloria. What's his first name?
Esteban.
What's his surname?
Gutierrez.
Right. I keep calling him Gloria Esteban because that's all we've called him.
I know. Yeah, it's terrible.
It's another driver.
But we tried to be more professional and not to resort to all our nicknames. And but it just doesn't work.
Genuinely then thought, I don't know what his first name is. It's just Gloria to me. Anyway, since 2007, I think, when he was a BMW test driver, or he got his first chance to drive a Formula One car almost at the same time as we began doing Side Podcast, his name has been on the great map of drivers. And so I'm quite interested to see whether that potential will turn into anything, because he looks like a handy driver. He seems to be the right kind of person for Sauber, and I think he'll fit very well alongside Hülkenberg.
Well, they have had their eye on him for a long time, because Manisha said, in 2010, we signed him up as an affiliated driver, and in 2011 and 2012, he was our test and reserve driver. We mapped out his path to Formula One step by step. So that seems a bit creepy to me, but...
That was back when they were BMW. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it goes all the way back then. Long-term commitment. So let's see if it bears any fruit.
So we have a couple of new faces to look forward to next year, and quite a lot of drivers that we won't or may not see again, unconfirmed at the moment. But that's not the only things that we're going to be seeing the last of this weekend.
Okay.
Number one on my list, and this, I wish I had like a party popper or something to go with it, the ugly noses. They are off.
Yes. Well, they're not off.
They're going to be covered up with a modesty panel, which is actually worse.
The look of the modesty panel won't be worse, but the name and the concept of a modesty panel for a Formula One car is, I agree, worse. Yes. As long as all the teams use them and don't do anything stupid, like put a dent in the modesty panel or something. I haven't actually read the regulations. I assume they're written in a way that nobody can avoid running it. Or
I actually don't understand it at all, because it's like, you can have your ugly noses, but cover them up. So what is the point of them at all? Just mandate that they don't have them.
We are between sets of regulations. And in 2014, there will be a sloped forward or drooped nose.
They have learnt their lesson then.
There is a long-term plan to make Formula One cars look good. And was there a team of people set up to make sure that that is respected?
Are you sure there's a long-term plan to make them look good? Because to me, they're getting gradually more and more ugly.
Gradually.
The wings, then yes. It was the nose.
Yes, yes. If it hasn't already been set up there, I'm sure there was a discussion of a team of people whose sole purpose in life is to make sure that Formula One cars look respectable, because it's very hard to sell the sport to new fans when your cars look like they currently do,
yeah,
which is a cardboard box. It's not, the cars have to
cardboard box with a dent in it.
Yes, a kicked in cardboard box, something that's been through the Royal Mail and come out the other end. Anyway, there should be, if there isn't already, some team working on this, and in the future I would assume that people have enough respect within Formula One to know that cars, it's important that the cars look good, because you can't sell it to fans and you can't sell it to sponsors, and it diminishes the value of the sport if the cars look like they currently do. That's not just a superficial thing. It's actually very, very important. And in the future, I very much hope that this is the ugliest Formula One cars ever got. This is, you know, this is the line in the sand. This is the watershed year when it said the cars are just so impossible to look at that something has to be done. So let's do this.
There's always going to be, you know, you're not going to please everyone. Everyone is going to have their own mm-hmm. taste. And people always say, oh, these were my favorite ones and these ones are ugly mm-hmm. and stuff. But I'm not sure that there's anyone that can mm-hmm. like no what we've had this year.
No one will look back on 2012 and say, I remember those cars. Weren't they gorgeous? No.
No. That's just not going to happen. Other regulation things that are being tweaked next year, so we'll have to make the most of this weekend. DRS in practice and qualifying. Well, we've already had two practice sessions, but that is not... It's only going to be allowed in the specific zones from next year.
Which makes a lot of sense, with the one exception that the reason the DRS is allowed during practice and qualifying to be open all the time, it's free-for-all with DRS, is so that teams will put some effort into making sure the DRS does what it's supposed to do. Because if there's that much performance gain to be found in qualifying, it's worth focusing on. The risk is, and the thing that the FIA were worried about, was if it's only limited to one place or two places during a weekend, maybe it will be forgotten by the teams or you know, will be pushed to the back and not be so important. There was talk today, the FIA are more than aware of this fact, and for next year there will be double DRS zones in every track where it's suitable, which I think is very, very good news.
Well, it is good news. I am happy with that, except unless it happens where one gets overtaken and then is overtaken straight back. But I don't think that's happened this year.
No, it was Abu Dhabi was the race you're thinking of, where one DRS last year cancelled. Yeah, when one DRS zone cancelled out the other one. They solved that this year, and I don't think, you know, they're obviously learning. With every time this gets used, data is being collected, people are analysing it. They're not just throwing DRS zones out, you know, left, right, and centre and hoping something sticks. They're genuinely looking at this, which is why I've been so behind the use of it. And if next year it will be increased in order to make sure that it's a key component of the Formula One show, then, you know, that gets my backing, gets my vote.
So next year we'll have eight different winners in eight different races. At least.
You ask a lot, young lady.
Well, you know, in terms of drivers, we've covered some of the people that may not be in it next year. Also, Mr. Schumacher, he is retiring, as we already know. Is it just me, or is it really weird to see Massa with a red helmet sitting in a red car? I don't know what he's doing.
Weird is not the word that came to my mind. Let me tell you.
Does it freak you out a little bit?
Yes, palpitations.
I don't know
a lot.
If it's a special helmet for this weekend or a special helmet for Schumacher, I'm not sure. I can't work it out.
I read somewhere the colours were significant to him, but ultimately it just looks like Michael Schumacher got back into the Ferrari, and that is a sight I do not relish. I do not need to see that on my TV screens in this day and age.
It is weird.
It's horrific.
And potentially, we could see the end of HRT, because they are not faring well.
It's a minor miracle, actually, that they're even racing.
There was an enormous amount of talk ahead of the US GP that they wouldn't participate, and that they were deliberately going slowly, and they wouldn't qualify so that they wouldn't have to race.
Yes.
They did qualify and they did race.
Yes.
So I thought, oh, that's all probably rubbish. But so far this weekend, they're sort of doing the same thing, and they've only completed like 50 laps between them.
So there has been talk for a number of races that the parts that the HRT team are running are beyond their shelf life and could therefore be dangerous. And so the HRT have to limit the amount of running they're doing.
Well, that would explain
which
that.
Which is because that's a risk. And also, the staff at the factory have been given their notice, I think, as of Monday.
They put the team up for sale, didn't they?
They did, yep. The team has gone up for sale a couple of weeks, 2 weeks ago. And since then, I thought staff at the factory would be working till Christmas, but actually they may be gone sooner than that. And when the cars return from Brazil, they may not actually have anywhere to return to.
It's not looking good.
It couldn't look any worse.
No.
It could not. This is much worse than even the likes of Super Aguri when they folded. It essentially, there is no money left to go around. I can't imagine there's anyone with enough money to buy the team.
It's not quite as bad as Super Aguri, because it's happening at the end of the year instead of in the middle.
Right, yes.
But essentially, people losing their jobs, team not racing anymore, that is about as bad as it gets.
Right now, as we sit here ahead of the Brazilian Grand Prix, I cannot see any means by which HRT will be found in Australia.
In 2013. Mm. So will someone else be taking their place? Are they opening it up to everyone else? Or we're just going to be down to 11 teams?
Who would want to join Formula All One those names, right now?
All those names that were fighting for teams. Yeah,
I think we should definitely give Peter Windsor a call. I'm sure he'll be up for that. He's out of a job because Speed have lost their Formula One coverage, so he's got nothing to do. Mm. So, you know, why not start up another Formula One team that failed to get anywhere?
They can't really do any worse.
Than this previous team or than HRT?
Both. so we could be down to 11. That's an odd number. I mean, it literally is an odd number.
It's the way it is. I can't imagine in the current climate, without any form of cost control in the sport, that there is anybody with enough money and as little sense is required to come into Formula One. You'd have to be out of your mind. I love the sport. I really do. But nobody with an ounce of sense right now, 1 year before the rules and regulations are all set to change significantly in 2014, business joining Formula One.
You might find people would want to come in 2014, but not the year before. That would make sense.
If there's any way you could buy the grid entry and sit out a year, spending time getting your acts together, then that would be viable. That's, as far as I can tell, the only thing that's even remotely possible.
I have the definitive comment on this from Lukey. The first time anyone has turned it down to 11. When we were talking about the championship earlier, I said there is a poll on the site and there will be another one shortly. And I will probably put a link in the show notes to those polls. But what is important about this fact is that they are new and exciting and fancy and shiny polls.
You like the polls.
They are so good. You've been working really hard on those. We had new Rate the Races, which I think we talked about in the show. We might not have. We haven't done very many shows. We had new Rate the Racing. What do you call those things?
Gauges? Yeah. Probably the technical term for it.
Look like speedometers and things. So that was really cool. And then we've made the polls fancy as well. So essentially everything that you can rate or put your opinion across on, predict,
vote,
it all looks amazing.
This is significant because all of the things that we've released relating to that is early. For the first time in a very long time, all these things were planned for to be introduced ahead of the 2013 season. And due to the fact that we have more time on hands, they're all just ticked off the list.
Well, you say we have more time on our hands. Due to the fact that we have done less podcasting and made more time for other things.
We've reprioritized some things. That's fantastic, really. I mean, the downside is, come next year, there isn't an awful lot of new things planned for the site, actually. We've sort of shown them all. You know, they're all out there now.
What it's going to do is make everything much better. So we've dabbled in things before. And tried things and then put them to one side while we think, oh, we'll make that better later. But now everything should be made better so we can do it all.
Yes.
That's the exciting thing.
We promised that 2012 would be a slow year for some podcasts, but 2013, we would gather ourselves together.
Ramp it up.
And put ourselves back out there and start doing more. So we've made a commitment to ourselves and to people who read and listen and follow that next year will be a big year for us, as long as this year we get to do everything we want to do. And mostly, we've ticked everything off the list. The site is looking pretty good. I mean, it's not missing too much in the way of features. You've given me a to-do list.
Always.
Of things that you would like tweaked and improved and just polished up.
It's never finished.
For the next season. It's never finished. It's now a good time to bring up the fact that we are splitting up in December.
You can't tell people that.
We are sort of splitting up, though. We're going our separate ways.
Everyone will be like, what?
No, we're going in...
No, stop it. You're nonsense. You said we are shutting down in December. We are not doing anything in December. I want to have peace and quiet to do all my coding. Which is what we did last year because we needed that time. But I have all these awesome plans for the off season. And so I am not. I am just keeping on.
So in Formula One terms, this would be like
That is the limit of our splitting up. We are not splitting up in any other way. No, we're not. No. Don't do that.
In Formula One terms, if you were looking at a team garage at the weekend, one of our garage doors is closing.
Yeah.
Whilst the other team is busily preparing the car. That's absolutely sort of how it's going to go. I genuinely need more time to work my way through this to-do list of tweaks. And the downside to everything you've given me to do is that when I've done it all, the site will look largely the same as it currently looks.
I know. It's always disappointing. But then you get the moments where we have shiny poles. Mm. And as Lukey has called them, swingometers.
That is a swingometer.
That's the word we were looking for.
Oh, my goodness.
So really what we have to say is he might be missing in action in December, but I am going to be all over the site. We're going to have lots of content so you won't get bored.
You are, I mean, it is your website, obviously it's your idea, it's your entire concept, but you are absolutely in charge and free to do whatever you want.
I'm owning December all for myself.
I am going elsewhere. Basana just asked the question, what about Crashed Ice? Ice returns. It's an odd season for the downhill ice cross championship. They've got one race and then they take a whole month off before they do
it's
another
like
race.
Next week or something, isn't it?
The first race is the 8th of December or something like that, and then there's not another one till January. So essentially my plan is to stop the minute Red Bull Crashed Ice comes to a close. So that's my last commenting, and then I'll be back. I'll take most of December off and come back in January, probably in time for the launches, mid-January.
Bless you. Yes. But I'm going to be about. I'm not sure what we're going to do in terms of the hangouts and things that we usually do on non-race weekends. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're going to do that every weekend. I will be led by the people.
Okay.
But I am here for your needs.
Are you so easily swayed that if people say we want to hang out every week, that you'll do one every week?
Yeah.
As long as people turn up when
absolutely.
When
yep. Whatever the people want.
Might you also?
We're all in it together.
Might you also be doing interesting things like Friday fun?
Possibly. Cool. Friday fun, maybe some Thursday thoughts. So you never know what's going to happen.
You are general entertainment manager for everybody during the off-season. You're going to keep people occupied.
That's the plan.
Brilliant stuff. Okay. Well, I'm very much looking forward to taking some time off. Try not to burn yourself out, though.
No, it's all going to be...
you've got to come back in 2013 raring to go.
It's all going to be fun. It's going to be brilliant. Now, that is pretty much all we have to talk about. You have to stay tuned to SciPodcast for all the fun stuff. It's going to be... the last 2 weeks of rankings, there are just two more rankings updates, and then we're going to crown our rankings champion.
And it's not very close right now, is it? Is Jensen Button?
It's not massive. It's about 10 points or something. So it's getting closer.
Okay.
Button is leading, but there's room for someone to catch him. So we've got 2 weeks left. You must send all your things to me, christine@sidepodcast.com, or tweet @F1Rankings. And then, we will see who is the rankings champion for 2012. It's quite exciting.
It's very exciting. If you want anybody other than Jensen Button to take that title this year, you have to get onto Twitter and tweet F1 Rankings. You have to get onto SciPodcast/Rankings, submit anything you can find to boost all the competitors, anyone who's close to be able to catch Jensen Button. They need to, they need all of your suggestions, all of your points. They've got this one race weekend and then one more weekend, and that's it.
Also, look out for the people that have 0 points, because no one likes to finish on 0 points. It's never fair.
And remember, these things are set in stone. Once a rankings is closed, it's closed. So if you want your favorite driver, there's still chance to bump them up a position. There's still chance to bump somebody down a position if you really don't like them and you don't want them to do well. Do keep an eye on it. It's all happening.
Yeah, and you can see the current standings at sidepodcast.com/rankings. So this weekend, if you are watching the race, you need to be on SidePodcast in the live comments, because it's our last race of the year and we all want to enjoy it together.
Oh yes, and we've got polls, we've got ratings, we've got loads of interactive stuff to make the race
Fact Box is going to be
as possible.
It's all over it.
All going to be go. We are loving it. I think the entire of our Sunday is going to be dominated by
my whole
the
weekend.
Build up. Yeah, the build up to the race. You do not want to blink. You do not want to miss this. I want it to last forever. I really don't want the weekend to end. It will be I'll be very sad when this season is over. Thank you for joining us in the few podcasts we have done this year.
Thank you for putting up with us in our lackluster podcasting schedule.
But we knew it would be this way.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, when we scrapped, what was the show called? Debrief? F1 Debrief. Even when we said there will be no more debriefs.
I can see that you miss it.
When we said there will be no more debriefs, we didn't know what we were going to do, but we knew we couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And we said we will take a year to sort things out, and then we will come back bigger and stronger and better than ever. And that is still the plan. And we are true to our word. We are doing exactly what we said.
I did say to you before we came on air that we've pretty much done the minimum podcasting you can do before we have to call it side website instead of side podcast. But thank you to everyone for sticking with us. It's been a good year, and it's going to be a good month as well with me and not you. And then we'll be back together in 20.
Maybe I won't come back
in 2013.
Maybe this is it. Maybe I'll just leave you to it. Stuff you.
You can't keep away.
We are splitting up.
No, we're not.